Now arriving downtown Santa Monica Station.
Hey, Adam. It's time for Notes on Your Notes. Welcome to Notes on Your Notes. I'm Joshua Townsend.
I'm Adam Lesser.
Adam, I have to say, is everything okay? I kind of heard like a little bit of a, you know, a little dark tone when you said your last name just now.
They're on day six of repaving the alley behind my apartment.
Wow, day six. Okay.
And sometimes that sound of the truck backing up, the little like earth moving truck, like dee, dee, dee.
Oh my God, that's horrible. Yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. It gets me a little, it grates a little on my nervous system.
Oh, wow. And this is day six. Wow.
It's okay.
Wow, your central nervous system must be like on fire.
Being tested.
Yeah. And I know what it's like. I mean, you know, you kind of want to have like the perfect setup and for us to have the perfect podcast for our perfect listeners. I get it.
I definitely like some clean audio.
And I would venture to say that maybe there's a little perfectionist that's alive and well, maybe.
Me? Yes. Yes. I am perfect about owning my perfectionism. I have no resistance to owning the fact that I feel more comfortable when things are creatively looking the way I want them to look. This podcast.
To wit. Yeah.
To wit. This has taken some time.
It has. Much longer than I had originally anticipated.
I know that I get the blame for being the perfectionist in this duo, but I will say that you sometimes occasionally listen to them and we're like, I think like we're close on this, but there's some things that... I admit that I'm 80% of the problem.
Okay, so Adam, what I really want to identify here is something that's really key, which is there's healthy expression of perfectionism, and then there's like unhealthy expression of perfectionism, and to know which land you're in is really key. It's vital.
I just, when you said that, I was so relieved that there's a healthy version of this. I was like, oh, okay, we're gonna make this right.
I'm gonna make it right. Then it'll be more right. Yeah, like. I worked with a guy once who was a conductor, and he was an opera guy. And anyway, he worked with some of the top opera singers on the planet and conductors and all that. And he said that the really good guys, the really good gals in that world would always be working at making the next show even better and better. And they were like, you know, looking at notes, looking at their notes before they went on stage. And I feel like that's a healthy expression because you're always striving to make it better.
Mm.
You know, it's alive, it's active. It's not like this fixed thing that they're trying to lock down and make it work. And I won't put out work until it is perfect. Then I feel like that moves towards the unhealthy expression where there's a bottleneck, if you will.
Yeah, I think part of the unhealthy expression is the belief that there's this crystallized form of whatever you're working on, and that will be the perfect form. The way you just described it is when working with opera singers is that everything exists on a spectrum of development and improving and change.
Mm-hmm.
That way of looking at it is not how a perfectionist looks at it. A perfectionist looks at the world and says, there's this one perfect version and I am forever in search of this perfect version of whatever I'm working on.
Okay, so you're playing at a whole new level of perfectionism. that's what perfectionists do, that they hold that vision. And it's fixed in some degree?
I think it's a belief system that underpins a lot of their behavior. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, you know what? Since this is a podcast about people and stories and the stories we tell, let's make it as if we're making up a character that's a perfectionist to the point where it's strangling him or her, and that what kind of things we'd look for underpinnings to help solidify that as a character trait.
So if I were building a character and I were writing a story, I would probably start with not just the trait that they're a perfectionist, I would also want to understand what is behind that. Like, why are they a perfectionist? What's the fear? Like, what are they actually worried about?
Mm-hmm.
Because that'll inform sort of what obstacles test them and
yes.
force their transformation.
Yes.
So let me ask you.
I mean,
Josh is staring at me like he has no perfectionism, that he's just the Dalai Lama. I know he's got some in there. So for you, when you have felt perfectionist, what are you actually afraid of?
It's a delay technique. I use it as a delay technique for not putting up work that I feel will not garner accolades. You know, so that would be fear of not being, you know, validated, not being, you know, looked at in a kind light by the material I'm putting out.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's a component also, I feel like, rejection from the community.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I experience less so, but I've felt this at times. Like, this is your one shot. And like, you don't want to put that one thing out that's like...
Yeah, scarcity.
The one thing that everyone remembers you for, and it's not very good.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and you know what I find really interesting is that we hand select these things to prove how we think and feel, because we can always look at the other side and see where in life that hasn't happened. You know, like, I don't know, Madonna. I'm sure Madonna's put out some duds, and you know, her whole career didn't hang on that one video or that one song.
Of course. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that what is interesting is that in the head of someone who is a perfectionist, intellectually, they may even know that famous authors write really bad drafts of novels. And, you know, they may even know all these things that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
that our idols are mortal,
mm-hmm.
But they don't always feel it. They, you know, what they feel is that anxiety and that clawing and that... I mean, some people use it as motivation, too.
Yeah.
Some people use it like, if I believe that there's always a better version of this, I'll keep working. And if I'm afraid of putting out a bad version, I'll keep working and keep at it.
Yeah, again, we go back to healthy or unhealthy. But if we're making this into a screenplay or a story, we would choose the unhealthy version because that's the aberrant behavior that the character is going to go beyond. So tell me what the point of view of how the character thinks and feels in terms of what locks it in, because that's key for any writer.
I think the character constantly thinks that the work they're doing is not quite there,
mm-hmm.
like not quite mm-hmm. good enough. Mm-hmm. And we're using this sort of in the context of, you know, writing, but it's really anything. It could be preparing dinner, you know, you know, like if I don't cook the broccoli just this way, it'll mm-hmm. be a disaster. It's almost like and the feeling is a constant fear of something not going right.
Okay, good.
Well, the word that comes to mind is safety. That this character never really feels safe in a way.
Wow. The other part is to show how that perfectionism, if this is the main thing for the character, shows up in every part of their life. Like, they show up at work and you know, they're not perfect. They're in their real personal romantic relationship. They're not perfect. Maybe at work, the boss rails on them because they're not perfect. So it reinforces the image that they have.
Yeah. So if we were going to talk about specific examples,
mm-hmm.
This character would not tolerate a wrinkle in their jacket as they dressed in the morning.
Yes.
The way they prepared in the mirror would be very precise. The way they put their tie on.
Yes.
When they got to the office, the way they prepared their reports would be very meticulous. There's an aspect of perfectionism, which I think is a little borderline OCD, mm-hmm. the way we think about it.
Mm-hmm.
In their relationship, when they selected a gift for the romantic partner, there would be a lot of detail into how they prepared that card, into the selection of the perfect gift. Gift would be an art form for them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one version of a perfectionism.
Yeah. I'm already feeling like a lot of pressure.
Just
as you're sharing with me, I'm like, whoa, this is intense.
Yeah, there is an intrinsic pressure. Usually for a perfectionist, the work becomes unpleasant.
Mm.
On some less conscious way,
mm-hmm.
it's actually not a pleasant experience.
Great. So these are all things that when you're working on a character, you want to explore. You want to bring in these strong points of view and see how it shows up. Then you brought it up beautifully just now, is that, you know, the outside world, you know, puts it on you, but also you demand it of yourself. So the demand is being shown both internally and externally.
Yeah. Oftentimes these characters will pick, environments that are very demanding. So, for example, ballet dancer.
Yes.
You know, very perfectionist world where every single movement, mm-hmm. the way they hold their feet, the way they hold their arms is going to be meticulously scrutinized.
Mm.
And that is part of their chosen profession. So they're always trying to get towards this ideal form. It is a form.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, high form. Or someone who gets like involved in like high pressure jobs, like maybe like news organizations. You know, you know, where factually everything has to be perfect, right? No matter what.
Are you trolling me?
What do you mean, Adam?
to the listeners, I didn't know. I started my career at NBC News, and that was You know, you could. I often think about those early days because if you got a fact wrong, you could get fired.
Yeah. That's high pressure, and it's got to be perfect.
Yeah, everything has to be perfect.
Then. Yeah. So you're setting up your character, right, in this way, and that's like a lot of the Act One stuff. And then, you know who does this really well? So those romantic comedies where there's the uptight, perfectionist, executive-driven New Yorker, Manhattan, mm-hmm. right? And then she has a sister who lives out in the country, and she passes away suddenly. And then she has two kids that she inherits, and then she has to fly and become the mother, and there goes her perfectionism. So that's a good example of how we would see it as an aberrant behavior that the character has to struggle against in order to come into her rightful place in life.
Yeah, so certainly we see this archetype show up in film and TV. I think that character Monk, he's more OCD.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's his name? Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah.
You know, a great example of the perfectionist archetype in film is Meryl Streep's character in The Devil Wears Prada.
Ah, yeah, nice. Yeah, and she doesn't really shift. She holds that. She holds that character trait,
largely because she's the villain in that movie, and our mm-hmm. villains typically don't transform in film. But yeah, she holds that.
Yeah.
So if you think back to character, how in film and TV, or even our character, how do those characters get past their perfectionism?
Well, in the romantic comedy, where you have an uptight, high-strung perfectionist executive. And they transport into the country, then the environment forces it upon them and relationship.
It's so interesting because that's how typically we see it in story. Also in the real world, I feel like sometimes it happens to people. There's a tragedy,
mm-hmm.
they lose a loved one, and then they start to loosen, you know, like their hold. They don't need to be attached to that perfectness. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of how the external is. I think also just for people who are maybe dealing with perfectionism in their creative work, sometimes just slowly putting small pieces out in the world and realizing that your world's not going to fall apart can be a way of sort of taking a small bite and just dealing with it. And also, quite honestly, I think you have to, at some point, take stock of what the real life consequences of your perfectionism is. You know, do you want to deal with feeling this way, that constant anxiety that nothing's ever quite good enough?
Mm-hmm.
And B, do you want to deal with the reality that like you might want a connection with an audience, or you might want other people to see your work, and you don't get to have that experience, you know?
Yeah, so really connect with what this perfectionism is costing you. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, that's a great insight. And that can generate, you know, new behaviors as well. I like your bite-size idea too. Yeah, just do like little bites, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know,
it's like bonbons. It's like one at a time.
And you put something out in the world and the world didn't blow up and you know, you're still alive the next morning and, you know, and then, yeah, and building on that.
Yeah, and I think the deeper work beyond just I think the actions feedback on the beliefs, but I think one of the beliefs, and really it's more than a belief, it's a feeling that sometimes transforms people I see is that it doesn't ultimately need to be perfect, that there is no perfect, and that we exist in constant development and evolution. And if I put something out and it's not exactly, quote unquote, perfect or the way I want it to be, that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with it.
Right.
It just means that I'm still working.
Yeah, it's part of a larger development. I like to bring in the element of nature and to see the imperfection within the perfection, or however you want to say it, of nature, because it's like there's a perfect sunset, and that perfect sunset is true for that moment, and it exists for the moment, and then it goes away, and you know, basically we can move into a world of yes. And taking that pressure off, you know what, as an artist, you're absolutely right, Adam. If that pressure can just be like taken off or just softened, it creates so much more space for other things to happen.
You know what I used to tell myself? What? This is so embarrassing.
What?
I used to be like, God, it would be so great to be mediocre. Like, embrace being mediocre. I don't mean it like I'm not mediocre, meaning like,
yeah,
you wrote that and it was mediocre.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there was something that was just a relief about that.
And that is one of the things that like working writers and working artists is that they do are able to hold that space of like just showing up and putting in the work, and whatever comes out comes out, and they're not holding on to this like huge vision, so they don't have that cross to bear.
Yeah.
If you're from the Judeo-Christian world.
The final level when you know you've beaten the game is when it is not as important whether you do or don't like the work you did, or whether other people do, when it's more just about what was the feeling and the experience of creating it, mm-hmm. and was that, how did that make you feel, and was that something that contributed to your life? Leonard Cohen is one of the few artists, writers, musicians who I think got to that point at the end of his life, where in interviews I've heard him uh-huh. say that like he was just completely interested in doing the work and not so interested in reception or how people viewed him, or necessarily I think even if he liked it. That's a long way off for many people, but that is when you know like you have mm-hmm. you know, you've yeah. captured the princess in Mario Brothers or whatever you were supposed to do in that.
Natalie Portman, I heard her do an interview recently, and she talked about the same thing, which is the act or the process in and of itself is the reward. So you've already shown up and you've already won. You've already had the experience, or you are living the experience. And it feels like that's one of the major takeaways from a lot of the work that we've been talking about and what we're investigating here, is that we have to fall in love with the process. And the process in and of itself is the reward. And if we can work and live in that space, a lot of other things just fall away.
You've already won. Like, even though you don't feel like it.
And start integrating that, right? Holding that as an emotional truth, not just an intellectual idea. And go, yeah, I've already won. There's a lot of ways that you and I and our listeners have already won, and to really start to emotionally own that, not just intellectually.
You can explore your perfectionism by leaving a perfect rating for us on the iTunes store. We would really like that. And email us at notesonyournotes@gmail.com if there's anything you want us to discuss on the show that is burning for you.
Also, we're on Facebook, and we're also on Instagram.
Our website is notesonyournotes.com. Big thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the music you hear on the show. The sound design and editing is done by yours truly. We'll talk to you next week.